When you hear a show tune from the Great White Way, does a shiver run through ya? Well, we're giving them to ya. Sing hallelujah and shout hooray. Come on along and listen to Broadway to Main Street, USA.
That very jaunty, jousty version of the March from Camelot was played by Andre Previn and his jazz quartet. Hello, this is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street on WPPB 88.3 FM Peconic Public Broadcasting. And I'm taping this the day before the actual broadcast. Today is November 23rd. 2013, which makes it the 50th anniversary of one of the saddest days in American history, of course, the death of President John F. Kennedy. And through an unlikely confluence of art and life, the musical Camelot has been forever associated with Kennedy's legacy and his 100 days in office in the White House and all the resonance that expands beyond that those 100 days. So today, we're going to look in a celebratory way, not in a morose way, I hope, at the musical Camelot by Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe. And here are some glorious performances from a really once-in-a-lifetime kind of score with some guest artists, and talk a little bit about how this particular show wove its way into American history. Well, in theater history, Camelot was that quote-unquote second show. Lerner and Lowe had set the world on fire in 1956 with My Fair Lady. They followed it up in 1958 with an original film of Gigi for MGM and were contemplating what would be their return to Broadway. And as the wags often say along the Great White Way, could the boys do it again? Well, what they did was they reassembled most of their creative staff from Camelot, I mean from My Fair Lady. That included director Moss Hart, the set designer Oliver Smith, actor Robert Coote, the extraordinary actress Julie Andrews to play Guinevere, and the one newcomer to the team, the one and only Richard Burton, clearly the greatest Shakespearean actor of his generation. And they adapted T.H. White's The Once and Future King, which is the story of King Arthur and his bride Guinevere, soon to be Queen Guinevere, and the ill-fated love triangle when the virtuous Sir Lancelot marches his way into Camelot and takes a very aggressive seat at the round table. Well, let us turn to the musical itself. We'll hear three songs in a row. These are the first three songs from the actual Broadway show, and they demonstrate, if nothing else, that Lerner and Lowe were absolutely at the top of their game in 1960 when the show premiered. We'll hear The Young King Arthur, played by Richard Burton, who's quaking in his, I don't know, leather-shod boots at the potential of an arranged marriage with the lovely Guinevere, who's come from France. And she, too, has her own apprehensions about marrying a man she's never seen before. But thankfully, King Arthur charms her and welcomes her to that beautiful shining spot that's known as Camelot. So here are Richard Burton, Julie Andrews, and then Richard Burton and Julie Andrews to sing three songs from Lerner and Lowe's immortal score from Camelot.
I know what my people are thinking tonight as home through the shadows they wander. Everyone smiling in secret delight. They stare at the castle and ponder. Whenever the wind blows this way, you can almost hear everyone say, I wonder what the king is doing tonight. What merriment is the king pursuing tonight? The candles at the court, they never burn as bright. I wonder what the king is up to tonight. How goes the final hour as he sees the bridal bower being regally and legally prepared? Well, I'll tell you what the king is doing tonight. He's scared. He's scared. You mean that a king who fought a dragon, whacked him in two and fixed his wagon, goes to be wed in terror and distress? Yes. A warrior who's so calm in battle, even his armor doesn't rattle, faces a woman petrified with fright. Right. You mean that appalling clamoring that sounds like a blacksmith hammering is merely the banging of his royal knees? Please. You wonder what the king is wishing tonight. He's wishing he were in Scotland fishing tonight. What occupies his time while waiting for the bride? He's searching high and low for some place to hide. And oh, the expectation, the sublime anticipation he must feel about the wedding night to come. Well, I'll tell you what the king is feeling tonight. He's numb, he shakes, he quails, he quakes. And that's what the king is doing tonight.
Genevieve, St. Genevieve, pedestal, worshipped and competed for. Not be carried off, or better still, cause a little woe. Where are the simple joys of maidenhood? Are these sweet, gentle pleasures gone for good? Shall a few not begin for me? Shall kith not kill their kin for me? Oh, where are the trivial joys, harmless, convivial joys? Where are the simple joys of maidenhood?
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. Gives a person pause, but in Camelot, Camelot, those are the legal laws. The snow may never slush upon the hillside. By 9 p.m. the moonlight must appear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot.
Well, after that number, the young Guinevere could not help but be charmed by the imprecations of King Arthur, especially as rendered by the Welsh baritone Richard Burton. So, of course, they get married, and all seems to be absolutely fine in the court of Camelot. Well, this being a musical based on a story, The Once and Future King, that takes a slightly more mythical view of King Arthur and the Round Table, there is a bit of a fantasy element, and this is supplied by Morgan Le Fay, who feels jilted by King Arthur and uses some of her magic to try to tempt him backwards into another realm. Here's a lovely version by Chris Connor, a cover recording of an extraordinary song. I think only Sinatra recorded it as a cover as well, but another testament to the glories of the score, of not only of glories of the Round Table, but the glories of Frederick Lowe in particular on this number. Here's Chris Connor to sing Follow Me.
Far from day, far from night, out of time, sight. In between earth and sea we shall fly. Dry the rain, warm the snow, where the winds never go. Follow me, follow me, follow me. To a cave by a sapphire shore, where we'll walk through an emerald door. And for thousands of breathless evermores, my life you shall be.
I'd have trouble resisting that voice of Chris Connor. Well, King Arthur sets up the Round Table in Camelot as a beacon for all knights around Europe to represent brotherhood and goodness and charity and good works and all that jazz. I guess they didn't use the word jazz back then. And a gentleman who heeds the call is Lancelot du Lac, here in the person of Robert Goulet, who made his Broadway debut in Camelot as Lancelot and launched a stellar career both on Broadway and in the recording world. And he hearkens, as I say, to the call of Camelot with a slightly self-inflated ego, which would have tremendous impact and implications once he arrives at Camelot. But for now, here he is. Moi himself, Robert Goulet.
Camelot, Camelot, in far off France I heard your call. Camelot. Give my all. I know in my soul what you expect of me, and all that and more I shall be. A knight of the Table Round should be invincible, succeed when a less fantastic man would fail. Climb a wall no one else can climb, cleave a dragon in record time, swim a moat in a coat of heavy iron mail. No matter the pain, he ought to be unwincible. Impossible deeds should be his daily fare. But where in the world is there in the world a man so extraordinaire? C'est moi, I'm forced to admit, 'tis I humbly reply. That mortal who these marvels can do, c'est moi, 'tis I. I've never lost in battle or game, I'm simply the best by far. When swords are crossed, 'tis always the same, one blow and au revoir. C'est moi, so admirably fit, a French Prometheus unbound. And And here I stand with valor untold, exceptionally brave, amazingly bold, to serve at the Table Round. The soul of a knight should be a thing remarkable, his heart and his mind as pure as morning dew. With a will and a self-restraint that's the envy of every saint, he could easily work a miracle or two. To love and desire he ought to be unsparkable, the ways of the flesh should offer no allure. But where in the world is there in the world a man so untouched and pure?
C'est moi.
C'est moi, c'est moi. I blush to disclose I'm far too noble to lie. That man in whom these qualities bloom, c'est moi, tis I. I've never strayed from all I believe. I'm blessed with an iron will. Had I been made the partner of Eve, we'd be in Eden still. C'est moi, the angels have chose to fight their battles below. And here I stand as pure as a prayer, incredibly clean, with virtue to spare, the godliest man I know. C'est moi!
Robert Goulet making his presence felt on the way to Camelot in that very musical. Hello, this is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street. And today, the day we're recording this, the day before the actual broadcast, November 23rd, we are remembering the legacy of President John F. Kennedy and the musical that will forever be associated with his administration and his legacy, trying to kind of take that apart and put that back together, what that might mean. Camelot was not the huge, huge hit that My Fair Lady was, although it was a considerable achievement. And soon enough, of course, it was made into a movie in 1967. Not a very good movie. Some beautiful production design in it. You have Richard Harris, another sort of roistering British actor with the name Richard, kind of tearing a passion to tatters and shrieking and carrying on in that movie. I wish Burton had done the film. But nevertheless, the thing I like most about it actually is Vanessa Redgrave as Queen Guinevere. She really acts the music extremely well, I think, and displays lots of variation of character. So at this point in Camelot, Lancelot has come to the Round Table and alienated everyone with his arrogance and ego. And Queen Guinevere wants nothing of him. In fact, would like him to be cut from fore to aft. So she enlists three other knights of the Round Table to take her to the fair and take it away, Vanessa Redgrave.
Sir Lionel?
Your Majesty?
Do you recall the other night that I distinctly said you might serve as my escort at the next town fair? Well, I'm afraid there's someone who I must invite in place of you, someone who plainly is beyond compare. The Frenchman's power is more tremendous than I have ever seen anywhere. And when a man is that stupendous, he by right should take me to the fair.
Your Majesty, let me tilt with him and smite. Don't refuse me so abruptly, I implore. Oh, give me the opportunity to fight him, and Gaul will be divided once more.
You will bash and thrash him?
I will smash and mash him.
You'll give him trouble?
He will be rubble.
A mighty whack.
His skull will crack.
Mon Dieu. Then you may take me to the fair. If you do all the things you promise. In fact, my heart will break should you not take me to the fair.
Sir Sagramore.
Majesty.
I have some rather painful news relative to the subject who's to be beside me at the next court ball. You were the chosen one, I know, but it's tradition it should go to the unquestioned champion in the hall. And I'm convinced that splendid Frenchmen can easily conquer one and all. And besting all our local henchmen, he should sit beside me at the ball.
I beg of you, Mom, withhold your invitation. I swear to you this challenge will be met. And when I have finished up the operation, I will serve him to your highness en brochette.
You'll pierce right through him.
I'll barbecue him.
A wicked thrust.
It will be dust to dust.
From fore to aft.
He'll feel a draft.
Well, Sir Sagramore, you may sit by me at the ball. If you demolish him in battle, in fact, I know I'd cry were you not by me at the ball. Sir Dinadan! Didn't I promise that you may guide me to London on the day that I go up to judge the cattle show? As it's quite a nasty ride, there must be someone by my side who'll be defending me from beast and foe. So when I choose whom I prefer go, I take the strongest knight I know. And young Dulac seems strongest, ergo he should take me to the cattle show.
Your Majesty can't believe this blustering prattle. Let him prove it with a sword or lance instead. I promise you, when I've done this gory battle, his shoulders will be lonesome for his head.
You'll disconnect him.
I'll vivisect him.
You'll open wide him.
I'll subdivide him.
Then you may guide me to the show. If you can carry out your program. In fact, I grieve inside should you not guide me to the show.
Milady, we shall put an end to that gallivant of noise and nerve. When we do all that we intend to, we'll be a plate of French hors d'oeuvre.
I do applaud your noble goals. Now let us see if you achieve them. And if you do, then you will be the free who will go to the ball, to the show, and take me to the
You swore that you had taught me everything from A to Z, with nary an omission in between. Well, I shall tell you what, you obviously forgot, that's how a ruler rules a queen. And what of treating me by joining me to animal or bird, from beaver to the smallest bubbling? I should have had a whirl, a changing to a girl, to learn the way the creatures think. Wasn't there a night on the summer long gone by? We passed a couple wrangling away. And did I not say, Merlin, what if that chap were I? And did he not give counsel and say, what was it now? My mind's a wall. Oh, yes, by Jove, now I recall. How to handle a woman. There's a way, said the wise old. A way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole began. Do I flatter her? I begged him answer. Do I threaten or cajole or plead? Do I brood or play the gay romancer? Said he, smiling, oh, indeed. How to handle a woman? Mark me well, I will tell you, sir. The way to handle a woman is to love her. Simply love me. Love her, love her. Love her.
Wise advice from a wizard to a king. That was Bran Tarfel, one of the great opera singers of the Western world. He recorded an album of Lerner and Lowe's greatest hits. I really like his rendition of that. Another Welshman, along with Richard Burton. His real name was Richard Jenkins. And we'll get to see Bran Tarfel on, I think, in the new year, in February, take on Sweeney Todd, I think at Avery Fisher Hall. Don't want to miss that one. Well, Camelot was a show that was so specific in terms of its needs and its characters. It was set in medieval England, after all. How many musicals can claim that particular distinction? So it didn't quite get as many commercial recordings as maybe My Fair Lady did, or The Same Times and The Sound of Music, or Bye Bye Birdie, songs that appeared around the same time. Here is a lovely, however, almost art song rendition by the great soprano Arlene Auger of a song that Guinevere sings, because she has actually, of course, according to legend, fallen in love with Lancelot and begun an illicit affair with him, an affair that will eventually crack the Round Table into pieces and cause great strife and upheaval in the kingdom known as Camelot. But that hasn't happened yet. Let's hear a beautiful song sung by Guinevere to Sir Lancelot.
Time for
A lovely rendition by soprano Arlene Auger, Before I Gaze at You Again from Camelot. Well, that's Guinevere to Lancelot, and Lancelot has his own response to having to separate from Guinevere, knowing that he has to give up his heart in order to help try to save the kingdom. Here is the one great soaring ballad from Camelot that I think transcended the show, and everybody knows. And thinking about who should sing it, it was pretty easy. Let's go back to the original singer, Robert Goulet, singing the Act II ballad that would forever make his reputation in the American Broadway, American musical theater, and world Broadway theater, If Ever I Would Leave You, from Camelot.
It wouldn't be in summer, seeing you in summer, I never would go. Your hair streaked with sunlight, your lips red as flame, your face with a luster that puts gold to shame. But if I'd ever leave you, how could it be in autumn? How I'd leave in autumn, I never would know. I've seen how you sparkle when fall nips the air. I know you in autumn, and I must be there. And could I leave you running merrily through the snow, or on a wintry evening when you catch the fire's glow? If ever I would leave you, how could it be in springtime, knowing how in spring I'm bewitched by you so? Could it be in springtime, knowing how in spring I'm bewitched by you so? Oh, no, not in springtime, summer, winter, or fall. No, never could I leave you.
Help them escape when they're blue. The shepherd who is ailing, the milkmaid who is glum, the cobbler who is wailing from nailing his thumb. When they're beset and besieged, the folk not noblessly obliged, however do they manage to shed their weary lot? Oh, what do simple folk do? We do not.
I have been informed by those who know them well. They find relief in quite a clever way. When they're sorely pressed, they whistle for a spell, and whistling seems to brighten up their day. And that's what simple folk do, so they say.
They whistle?
So they say.
What else do the simple folk do to perk up the heart and get through? The wee folk and the grown folk who wander to and fro have ways known to their own folk we throat folk don't know. When all the doldrums begin, what keeps each of them in his skin? What ancient native custom provides the needed glow? Simple folk do you know?
Once upon the road, I came upon a lad singing in a voice three times his size. When I asked him why, he told me he was sad, and singing always made his spirits rise. And that's what simple folk do, I surmise.
They sing.
I surmise.
Arise, my love, arise, my love. Apollo's light in the skies, my love. The meadow shine with columbine and daffodils blossom away. Your Venus call to one and all. Come taste delight while you may. The world is bright and all is right and life is merry and gay. What else do the simple folk do? They must have a system or two. They obviously outshine us at turning tears to mirth. Have tricks a royal highness is minus from birth. What then, I wonder, do they to chase all the goblins away? They have some tribal sorcery you haven't mentioned yet. Oh, what do simple folk do to forget?
Often I am told they dance a fiery dance and whirl till they're completely uncontrolled. Soon the mind is black and all are in a trance, a violent trance astounding to behold. And that's what simple folk do, so I'm told. Sit around and wonder what royal folk would do, and that's what simple folk do.
Oh, no, really?
I have it on the best authority.
Yes, that's what simple folk do.
That, of course, was Richard Burton and Julie Andrews from the original cast recording of Camelot, trying to see if they can repair their marriage somehow and meet somewhere in the middle to rise above the deep, dark, and disturbing feelings they have, knowing that Camelot is about to crumble. Hello, this is Larry Masson, your host for Broadway to Main Street here on 88.3 FM, WPPB, Peconic Public Broadcasting, here in Southampton, New York. Camelot seems such a great part of the American musical theater repertory. It's worth remembering that the show was in a lot of trouble on its way in to New York. It went to Boston and Toronto. Its director, Moss Hart, suffered a heart attack in rehearsal. There were many injuries. Wags in New York called it a medical, not a musical. It was a lot of material. Lerner took over the direction, so on and so on and so forth. And it kind of stumbled into town in 1960. And then Lerner got the great idea to present or maybe he was offered to present from Ed Sullivan, a tribute to Lerner and Lowe. And they decided to do about 20 minutes of Camelot with the original cast, including that number we just heard, What Do the Simple Folk Do? And all of America watching on television on Sunday night fell in love with Richard Burton and Julie Andrews and Robert Goulet and the score and the myth and the legend and all that. And they kind of turned Camelot into a box office hit. That's the sort of the first part of the story. Camelot has obviously entered our lexicon in many different ways. It was not the first musical set in the court of King Arthur. That was A Connecticut Yankee by Rodgers and Hart in 1927, and they revived it in 1943. And, of course, the Monty Python gang took it upon themselves to spoof that with Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which became the musical Spamalot. Now, our next number is from that great satirical review, Forbidden Broadway, and it's a spoof of Spamalot. But, how do you spoof a show that's already kind of a spoof? Well, what do the clever folk do? They write a number like this for Forbidden Broadway, spoofing Spamalot.
It's true, it's true. Mike Nichols had a plan to satisfy each Monty Python fan. A law was made by fans of Eric Idle. They laugh before the joke's right on the dot. And now the cast is getting suicidal at Spamalot. It's so annoying. The audience knows every joke that's coming. And people shout out,
wait, that's not the plot!
So we trash Camelot, and Marg and Ham a lot, and Monty Python fans get hot when they see Spamalot.
In every show, there comes a song like this. It starts off soft and low, and ends up with a kiss. Where is the song that goes like this? Where is it? Where? Where?
A sentimental song that casts a magic spell. They all will hum along, will overact like hell. Oh, this is the song that goes like this.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is! And now we can go straight into the middle eight. A bridge that is too far for me.
I'll sing it in your face while we both embrace.
And then we'll change the key. But wait, there's something strange.
The lyrics didn't change.
We're Forbidden Broadway here.
The words were real and clear.
We stole the song that goes like this.
Now Eric Idle's pissed.
But one song won't be missed.
Why should he make a fuss?
He stole this joke from us.
So we'll steal it back from that
do that, please.
And rhyming damn refrain
with we shall go insane. So we'll see their song and make them pause. For this is the song they stole from.
Wow. Three shows in one, folks. You get Forbidden Broadway, Spamalot, and Camelot. Well, that was just a little segue sideways to laugh at ourselves a little bit. We are celebrating the original cast score of Camelot. here today on Broadway to Main Street on the 50th anniversary of the death of President John F. Kennedy, whose legacy was so intertwined with this musical. Let's do a little tribute to the wonderful music by Frederick Lowe, which often gets overlooked a little bit. This is one of his great Schubertian tunes from the second act of Camelot, rendered by Mel Torme, sung originally by Guinevere, but a great song no matter who sings it. I Loved You Once in Silence.
I loved you once in silence, and misery was all I knew, trying so to keep my love from showing, all the while not knowing you loved me too. Yes, loved me in lonesome silence, your heart filled with dark despair, thinking love would flame in you forever, and I'd never, never know the flame was there. Then one day we cast away our secret longing, the raging tide we held inside would hold no more. The silence at last was broken. We flung wide our prison door. Every joyous word of love was spoken, and now there's twice as much grief, twice the strain for us, twice the despair, twice the pain for us, that we had known before. Well,
that was Mel Torme. Camelot was a more than modest hit and was playing around the world, playing in London, playing around in Chicago on tour, until November 22nd, 1963, when the world changed, as Alan J. Lerner said. Lerner went to college with John Kennedy. They had edited the Harvard Crimson and the Yearbook together. And a week after Kennedy was killed, there was an article about him in Life magazine. There was an interview with Jacqueline Kennedy, and she wrote, or she was quoted as saying, "When Jack quoted something, it was usually classical," she said, "but I'm so ashamed of myself, all I keep thinking of is this line from a musical comedy. At night, before we'd go to sleep, Jack liked to play some records, and the song he loved most came at the very end of this record. The lines he loved to hear were, 'Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment that was known as Camelot.'" And Theodore White, who interviewed her, continued, "She wanted to make sure that the point became clear and went on. 'There'll be great presidents again,' she said, 'and the Johnsons are wonderful. They've been wonderful to me. But there'll never be another Camelot again.'" And when Lerner read this article, he just burst into tears. He was beside himself. And he realized that would be part of the legacy of the show. Ironically enough, he once wrote, although from that moment the first act became the weak act and the second act was the strong one, God knows I would have preferred that history had not become my collaborator. So let's finish this Camelot broadcast tribute with that song that John Kennedy loved to hear every night before he went to bed, from the miraculous score of Lerner and Loewe's Camelot.
Each evening from December to December, before you drift to sleep upon your cot, think back on all the tales that you remember of Camelot. Ask every person if he's heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if he has not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot.
Camelot, Camelot, by Norman gives a person pause. But in Camelot, Camelot, those were the legal laws.
Where once it never rained till after sundown, by 8 a.m. the morning fog had flown. Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment.
That was known as
Well, where is the time all gone to? This is Larry Maslon here at Broadway to Main Street. Let's catch up next Sunday at 3.
There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh, well, we'll catch up some other time.